Well, first of all, let me apologize to the audience and to my fellow panelists for the fact that I came late, which may mean that I will repeat perhaps some of the things that were said earlier that I didn't hear. But I think there is some good news. One shouldn't be too depressed about the present situation. The first, of course, is that the United Nations did show itself to be revived as a sort of internationally legitimate forum for opinion around the world. I don't think anybody watched what the UN was doing in the last period, the February-March period, running up to the war in Iraq as intensely as had been done since 1962 when the October missile crisis happened. In the meantime, the UN had rather faded into the background. This was like a replay of that crisis when everybody was looking to the UN to see what it would do. And so I think for a whole generation of people who weren't around in 1962, at least politically consciously, this has been a huge learning experience and very relevant. Second point, I think, is that the medium states in the world have shown themselves remarkably courageous. The so-called five middle states who were members of the United Nations Security Council were not bullied or bribed by the United States into selling their vote and going along with the United States. They held out very bravely under massive pressure and refused to go along with the United States. So I think that is a real sense that we are in a much more multi-faceted world in which size alone isn't important. Totally, it isn't the only value, and so the United States, I don't think, gets its way all the time. Third thing, of course, is the fact that there was a threat of a veto, that the even countries like France, under massive pressure, again from the United States and Russia also, did not go along and threaten to use their veto, I think is also a massive step forward. What's the point of having a veto if you don't sometimes opt to use it? I mean, there are big questions, of course, whether the veto is justified and whether in a reformed United Nations one would actually have a veto. But the countries that have it did threaten to use it, and I think that's very important. But I think the most important thing is a point I'm coming on to now, and that is the issue of preemption. As you know, some months before the United States decided to make an issue out of Iraq, Bush made a big speech to the West Point Military College graduating class, saying that from now on, United States policy would be one of preemption. They would hit people long before they were in a possible position to do anything against the United States. And this is something I think that one has to look out for very carefully over the next a few years, because I think the Bush administration will try and get this concept of preemption accepted, not only as a part of the international structure, but even possibly into international law. And even our government, the Prime Minister here, even though he went along with Bush on this war, did not accept the concept of preemption. And in fact, it's precisely now that he's getting into this problem over whether or not there were weapons of mass destruction and whether or not there was a 45-minute threat facing people in this country, an imminent threat, as Tony Blair put it, shows that he didn't actually accept the argument that threat might be some way in the future and you could still hit a country to deal with that threat. He accepted that it has to be, in the old United Nations jargon, it had to be an imminent threat to international peace and security under Chapter 7 of the United Nations Charter. And I think that's really important, and we have to be really on the lookout. And I think, finally, my last point is the question of Iran. I mean, we're all now looking to see where the United States would like to strike next, and Iran seems to be the head of the list. But I think because of this issue of preemption not being accepted, even by this country, let alone the rest of the world, there is very little chance, in fact, that Bush could do anything in a UN framework or in any way, according to international law, against Iran. Iran is different in other ways because, of course, with Iraq, there was a whole series of UN resolutions. There's never been a single resolution about nuclear weapons in Iran or about Iran violating any international standards or anything. And even if, in 2 weeks' time, when the International Atomic Energy Agency in Vienna issues what will be a really quite important statement on Iran, their inspectors, led by Mohammed El-Baradei, the director, who figured a lot, of course, in the debates in the UN over Iraq. He visited Iran in February this year and visited a very controversial site at a place called Natanz, and he will say whether or not it was a violation of the statements that Iran has made to the to the IAEA in the past. But even if he finds them in violation, which is highly questionable, even if he does find them in violation, it in no way would trigger any kind of UN action. There are many countries, unfortunately, which have violated the non-proliferation obligations that they've made to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. And so if Iran was in violation, of course, it would be bad news, but it would in no way mean that there's a trigger for some kind of UN action. So I think there is some good news around.
Well, thank you very much.